Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me is the one, the only, Matt McWaters. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Jay. Happy to be here. How are you doing?
I am amazing.
That's awesome. It's good to hear, and we all can't be amazing in this in these times, so it's good to hear when we are.
Yeah. So, Matt, you've said before that that you're a person who has some pet birds. I can hear at least one in the background. How many birds do you have?
I only have one bird. I just covered them up for this.
It's fine.
I did get a puppy though, so it's a little bit more exciting than my bird.
How long have you had your bird?
Oh, 5-6 years.
Nice. And what's your favorite thing about your bird?
My bird does not like my girlfriend. It's my favorite thing.
Okay. I have kind of stolen the heart of Brian's cat at this point, and it's kind of funny because he's had, his cat for 21 years at this point.
Oh, geez.
And she is totally wrapped around my finger, so it's kind of funny.
Nice. Yeah. Our bird is Harvey Birdman, and he's an attorney at Caw, and from when I got him, he just did not like Alicia very much. Totally chill with me. The only thing he likes to do is land on Alicia's head and poop in her hair, which is great.
All right. Well, we're going to be talking about the new Steamroller packet. I also told patrons that you've been playing Mercs and Signar, so they have some questions for that as well. And so let's dive in. We'll do, again, the format will be 45 or 50 minutes on the first free episode for everyone, and then same length for the bonus episode for the patrons. So first set of questions, we've got a bunch from our patrons. First one here from Cray. He said, what list/themes are you excited for in the new Steamroller?
So the new Steamroller has a lot of really weird implications, and I'm sure I'm going to dive into these more as we talk, but the big thing that that the Steamroller does is, because it's so fast, it enables a lot of really cool and dynamic game plans. So I think the army I'm most excited for is playing Shay in Irregulars. Shay Irregulars is a list that was cool, but never really took off as like a competitive structure. It's gotten a lot of pieces in the form of Gas before and other things like that. But having an army that threats, between 16 to 22 inches, and you can really do some really amazing things on the new scenarios, where you can push up aggressively, cloud wall with Gas before, have Nemo on a flank, thunderbolting heavies away or thunderbolting archons away, whatever. And then you can do that, and you can then push like on the bottom of two for a 5-0 scenario win, and just force your opponent to go all the way into the zones or risk getting 5-0'd. Otherwise, I'm really excited about playing Silverline Stormguard and Centurions in Signar. Especially with casters like Haley 2 or Cray, or there's a few others I was playing. Striker 2 is obviously just always good. The ability to just like walk up into a zone and sit on the edge of it and be like, I threat the entire zone, you can't charge me, you're kind of stuck here, is really cool. And when you have like a Haley 3 or a D cell that pushes them up to like kind of hard levels to deal with, it's a very powerful place to be. So that's what I'm excited about.
So it seems like Haley 3 kind of was a big presence for a while, and then she kind of fell off a lot of people's radar. Do you think that she's poised for a comeback?
So I think Haley 3 suffers a few problems in the current environment. First and foremost, Death Archons keep her very honest. which is not where you want to be as a caster. Especially a Haley 3, where you want to be abusing the fact that you have more defense and incorporeal models and all that stuff. But Death Archons really make it hard to do that. I think if you can either dodge Death Archons as a matchup or maybe have tech in your list, like I like Triple Hunter to hunt down Death Archons. You can play her. I don't know if she'll come back as like a meta dominating force. Maybe when the average like Matt, when we start taking less Archons and start taking more dudes and more battle group models, she'll probably be better. But in the current Archon meta, I don't think it's super likely that she'll be a dominant force again.
All right. So next question from Cray. He says, "What are the most impactful changes to the Steamroller packet in your opinion?"
I mean, just everything being faster is, and like towards the middle of the table is probably the most impactful, Steamroller change overall. Like we have, when I was playtesting the Steamroller, with my playgroup and online, it was just like, most games would end on turn three. I don't think I had a game that went to turn four or five, which is wild considering how almost every game I played in 2019 went to turn seven. Yeah,
it is a pretty big change. I mean, it feels like one of the really, like you said, one of the really common strategies for 2019 was playing for turn seven. And if that's much less so the case, what, I guess, I'll do a two-part question for you. I guess I'll just do the first part and then follow up. So first off, what in your opinion has caused things to change that dramatically with the pacing of the game?
So the Archon, so the first thing I want to talk about, right, is like the Archon meta. Every, like the Ryquest Archon meta pushes people into lists that are, they're more activations than we're used to, but they're small, like they're individual model activations that mm-hmm. kill, like that can kill a lot of stuff. But that also leads to like, when, you know, half of your points are in four models, and Archons aren't like oppressively hard to kill most of the time. So when you have to kill four models and your opponent loses half their army, it can be very easy to just lose the game quickly. Like, so, you know, just talking about this new Steamroller packet, the two-parter question here, it's like the problem is your armies are smaller. They have a wider footprint, but the footprint's not as durable as, let's say, Warjacks, Warbeasts, big units of guys, whatever. And then you combo that with having to sit on objectives or sit on scenarios and sit on them for, like, you know, multiple turns. And Archons just aren't very good at that kind of gameplay, especially if they have to sit in a corner of a scenario and do basically no contribution. Like, a Death Archon sitting on the edge of a zone not killing things is really sad, right? So when that happens, you're kind of stuck in this like loop of like you have to fight in the middle of these scenarios or else you get 5-0'd. You have to put your killy models that aren't as durable as you would like them to be for that kind of gameplay. And then you combo this with like the relative offensive output increase of like all of the Riot Quest models and all of the associated like Archons and stuff, and things die really fast, especially casters now die really fast. So casters have to play safer. Everything has to play safer to not die. And then, but also things have to be in zones. So the loop ends up being you go up, you get in a zone, your opponent gets a turn of fighting you. And if they clear the zone and kill all your models, it's a twofer, they win. But if they don't, then they probably lose because you get to counterpunch. And like there are ways to play around this, and you know it's not necessarily taking less Archons, but it's certainly like being aware of the limitations of them. But you combo that with the fact that it's really challenging to clear zones of like multiple heavies with Archons or like something like a Hellmouth or a Colossal, and you get these like really big scenario slides. There's you know, if you look at the scenarios, like a good example would be this first one, with the circle flag in the middle and the two flags and objectives on the side, mm-hmm. was a split decision. It's very possible to just 5-0 this on a good attrition turn. Like if you have like a Scar 1 Stalkers list as an example, it's very possible to just go kill the objective, clear the zone with all your Stalkers, and then, you know, run a solo to the flag. And you're like, cool, I killed 2 Archons, a bunch of heavies, or maybe some dudes, whatever. Their caster had to play back because, you know, everything in the game kills casters now. And like now you're up 4-0 or 5-0 and your opponent's like lost probably 30, 40 points of models. And it's really hard to fight back through that.
So in some of the previous Steamroller editions, it was a lot of kind of like the brick list, the tankier lists, Trollbloods at some points had kind of a faction identity crisis with this. They had a hard time with the Steamroller packet and it couldn't cover enough of the table, etc. Do you feel like some of the lists that are either a little bit tanky or that maybe emphasize a little bit more on durability may have a bit of a more of a place in this new Steamroller, or do you think that it's still sad times?
So I think that we're actually going to, so like the Steamroller has a lot of interesting implications that I think since we're just starting real life play again. And I mean, like, speaking for myself personally, I had my first real life game of War Machine in over a year and a half, just the other week. Mm-hmm. And I think that like the online community is great for practicing and learning stuff, but there's obvious limitations of it. I think as the Steamroller develops, we're going to be seeing some really interesting lists pop up. I know that John Henry has been playing a very cool Madrek 3 50 dudes list, which is just like Creel Warriors and Raiders, and you just push all your guys forward and feed on them, and then, you know, you score like 1 or 2 points on their turn and the game's effectively over. And like that's the kind of lists that are going to do really well in the Steamroller. Things that can not get pushed out of zones by like an aggressive play, but also things that can just stop your opponent from being able to score. So I don't think necessarily defensive lists will be good, but I think that defensive feats will be incredibly powerful. Using an example like Haley 2, who has been not great in Mark 3 for the most part since her multiple nerfs, her feat is like the best it's ever been. When you can feed on, you know, 8 models and those 8 models are 8 points each and they get absolutely shut down by her feet, it feels really good. And then like when you just take like 1 or 2 points while doing that and then your opponent doesn't have a counterattack, it's really strong. But like the problem is like lists that just like focus on skewing big defensive values, like skewing armor as an example, are not particularly good because of Riot Quest and because of Archons and because of all the solo support and mercs and whatnot, it's really easy to kill armor 28 blockaders as an example, or maybe not even kill them, just control them. So I think what we'll see as a return is lists that are durable, but not by the virtue of their stats, but more so by the virtue of like how many attacks you need to cut through them or how many attacks they remove from your opponent, if that makes sense.
So I guess my last question on my digression of questions is, this is more of a personal opinion, I guess, but do you enjoy the direction that they went with these changes and like the impact it's going to have on the meta? Are you excited for them, or do you wish they'd gone a different direction?
Well, I mean, it's a little early for me to have strong opinions on this. Like, if you were in my local group chat when they released the first Steamroller changes and it was in CID, you would have gotten a pretty negative response from me. I was not their biggest fan initially. However, after I tested them a bunch and saw how it impacted the game, it grew on me a bit. Would I have liked the game to move back towards like more unit heavy things and like maybe more Warjacks and Warbeasts in general? Probably. Like, that's my preferred part of the game. But I think these changes are probably a net positive. Anything that possibly changes the meta and makes it new, I'm just a fan of innately. as long as these scenarios and steamrollers do interesting things, I won't have anything negative to say about them.
Okay. I think that's fair. So next question from Cray. He says, what do you see being the future of Steamroller?
Oh boy. If you had asked me that before COVID, I would have a very concise answer for you. I mean, what do I think Steamroller should be, or what do I think they'll do, are very different questions. What I think they should do, and I know other people have said it, and I know that it's not a popular subject, is they need to introduce a limited format for War Machine. And it needs to be in the Steamroller document. It needs to be the competitive form of the game. They need to come in and say, like, look, no one's been playing Long Gunners for 5 years. It's time that they go. Because there's nothing worse than going to your local game store and seeing 6 boxes of Long Gunners on the shelf. So I think that's what probably needs to happen. And I think us as a community need to accept that, like, it's okay if we can't play with some of our toys, if it's for the health of the game. But the counterpoint to that is, what do I think will happen? I think that Steamroller in the future will likely just continue to try to push the meta in different ways than the models push it. Because that's what it's consistently always done, right? Like, if the Steamroller document is like a big, slow, grindy Steamroller, then Warjacks tend to be super good. And then when Warjacks are good, infantry are good because they're good at killing Warjacks. And then, like, when the Steamroller document, you know, has more terrain on it, guns are worse. So you want to play, you know, you don't have to play casters that protect you from guns as much, and so on and so forth. So I think that we'll just continue to get more of the same in terms of, like, things trying to push the meta in different directions. But I just really wish they would release a limited format. I'd be okay with half of my collection going quote unquote legacy if it meant that we could better balance new and upcoming releases, and maybe open up some of these themes for more dynamic and cooler releases.
I guess one of my thoughts with it is that this was the question I'd meant to ask earlier, and that was what's slipping my mind. But I guess one of the things that it's kind of a balancing line. So on the one hand, I think that if every game is like a 7-round attrition slugfest, that can that makes for a pretty long play experience. And also, if you're doing like a multi-round event in a day, that can take a bit of a mental toll on you. On the other hand, if the game is like too quick, if the tides of the game shift too quickly, a lot of times people can feel like, you know, I was never really in the game, or, you know, I just got, you know, kind of beat down or whatever, right? And so I think that if you get too far on either extreme, it can be an issue. Do you feel like this Steamroller is having somewhat of a balance of that? Do you feel like it's a little bit towards the aggressively fast side of things? I guess, what are your thoughts with that?
So I don't think that the Steamroller is necessarily good or bad. I think that Steamroller being fast or slow is determined by the lists that are viable to be played on it. And like, the viability of lists to be played on it are entirely dependent on what lists are in the meta, right? So like, using one of my least favorite lists that exists, and probably one of everyone's least favorite lists to play against as an example, Aurora 2. Aurora 2 is a massive problem on this new Steamroller. She is the army that basically she doesn't threat the furthest. There are armies that threat further, but she is the army that threats the furthest while having, you know, good defenses and good offenses, and doesn't need to hit and doesn't need to roll damage because she explodes everything. When you have an army like that, that is composed of elite models that are very good at killing things, but also pretty much outthreats most of the counters to it. And then you pair this with something like Death Archons in the list that actually help exacerbate the problem and limit the meta. It makes this new scenario packet really lopsided. It creates this kind of like dynamic of So just to give everyone some like insight, I guess, on my playtesting with Aurora 2 on this packet. In games, I went second with Aurora 2. I won every single game. This is across like 22 games, I want to say. So it's not like a super deep sample size, but
that's,
I mean,
still a lot.
Yeah.
Still a lot of games to go 22-0 on.
Well, I mean, I also went like 29-2 with Ashlyn 2. So, I mean, like it's all perspective, right?
Sure.
But yeah, like Aurora 2 going second on most of these scenarios creates a really interesting dynamic if your list isn't prepared for it. And so when we talk about the scenario, these steamrollers being super fast, this is kind of what I'm talking about is taking a scenario, not split decision. Let's talk about the wrestling belt, right? So it has an objective for you to kill, a flag in the middle of the circle. So it's very possible to score five. It's actually not that challenging to score five. So if Aurora goes second, her whole army pretty much 80s, well, all the angels do. It runs up aggressively turn one, uses flying high and clouds from Gatsby to limit your ability to interact with it. And then as the player who went first on the top of two now, you're stuck with a really awkward decision.
Mm-hmm.
You either have to flood the zones with all your models so that you don't lose on scenario 5-0, or you have to kind of like take a gamble and be like, well, she can't kill this model in the corner of this zone, or I'll put three warjacks in this zone that she can't clear. But the problem with doing that is giving Aurora a turn where she feats, kills like 20 to 30 points, and scores 4 points is probably just game over.
Right.
And so, like, if the meta, if like Aurora 2 and Aurora 1 to a lesser extent didn't exist in the meta in this form, and we didn't have lists like, you know, Kruger 2 who could do very similar things in this format, the scenarios would be really slow, actually, because, like, imagine if the meta, you know, was just warjacks and warbeasts, and like the game was just you shove all your stuff into the middle and you fight. That would be like it would just be an attrition game that you would happen to win on scenario after you've tabled your opponent. But because we now have Archons and Angels and all these Riot Quest solos and all of these like really powerful individual models that can spread their influence really wide on a table, you end up with these like massive scenario swings from casters like Kruger 2, Aurora 2. Those are probably the biggest ones. Then there's like Shay, who I've been playing. He's less obviously powerful than Aurora 2 and Kruger 2 in this format. But if your opponent, again, if your opponent doesn't have the tools to kind of hamper your offensive on the bottom of two, you just end up getting demolished. And again, this is where something like Haley 2 or Silverline Stormguard or Centurions end up being really powerful because you can put them on those edges of the zones. They can't be charged. And, you know, Aurora 2 doesn't have a way to remove them. So you can just kind of sit there and be like, okay, what are you going to do about it? And that's kind of the weirdness. So like, I think maybe 6 months from now, when we've all had enough time to maybe actually play some cons and, you know, get more than 3 games online a week, or whatever, however many people are playing, I think we'll see these scenarios kind of become a little bit more solved in the way of like what you have to have in your list to be able to play them. Speaking of lists that happen to be really good in this new packet, the Bethane 2 double Archangel list with 2 Hellmouths is a terror on this new packet. The ability to put Hellmouths in zones to keep them neutral the whole game, and then just kind of like bully 1 or 2 zones with Archangels is incredibly powerful, especially into lists that don't have the kind of tech that protects them against the like massive shooting that Archangels present. So I think the scenario packets are really fast, but I think that they're just so fast. Like every scenario is capable. You're capable of scoring 5 in a turn without, except for split decision. Split decision is probably the hardest one to score 5, but every other one you can score 5 with just like a good turn, which is probably going to lead to a lot of toxic game experiences.
Yeah. All right. So, next question from Cray. He says, how much of a travesty is it that Nemo 1 and Nemo 2 didn't get the good touch?
So I actually really like Nemo 2 in the current packet. Having Polarity Shield as a spell, as an upkeep, is actually massive in this new Steamroller. I do wish that they did get touched. I wish a lot of stuff in Signar, especially the Warcasters and the Warjacks, got a little bit more of a in-depth review, because like the Centurion is really good and giving it Shield Guard is interesting, but it doesn't really solve the problems of what the Centurion struggled with. And Signar doesn't really have a Pathfinder solution outside of Kray, or and I think there's one more Pathfinder solution in Signar. Maddox, she has Onslaught. And so like, I wish that they had like looked at the solos maybe and been like, okay, let's give this solo the ability to give Pathfinder to a Warjack, or let's give the Junior, instead of his Arcane Bolt or whatever he has, let's give him Boundless Charge, or just a spell that gives Pathfinder or something, right? I think those would have been really good. But yeah, Nemo's could have gotten a little bit of a rework, and I would have been happy about it. Nemo 2 is super interesting now, though. Not a lot of his kit is great, but Energizer and Polarity Shield are both good spells.
And then the final question from Cray, he says, any crazy hot takes on Signar?
I don't know what's a hot take and what's not at this point. I think your namesake Cray is really good right now. I think Haley 2, Haley 3 are really good right now. I think Haley 1 is phenomenal. In terms of lists that can solve things like Aurora 2, Haley 1 with Stormlances, or yeah, Stormlances with Deadeye and shooting twice, with the -2 defense from her slowdown in her control range spell, just murder angels like they're not even there. It's actually really neat. Other than that, I think Nemo 3 is really good in this meta. His Centurions that can't be TK'd by Kruger are phenomenal. The fact that Kruger doesn't bring World Weirds as frequently anymore or at all means that you can just put defensive upkeeps on them, make them unable to be moved, and park them in zones, make them unchargeable, and then Kruger's really sad. Yeah, that's pretty much my entirety of my Signar thought process.
All right, so next set of questions from Imperial. He says, should every board have a piece of windswept terrain?
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I don't really like the new terrain pieces. I think a good rule to follow when building your table is what is the most annoying piece of terrain you can put on the table? Build like a chart of like the three most annoying pieces of terrain. So quicksand, windswept, and maybe like a burning earth building or whatever, and throw those on the table, because no one wants to deal with those. And that makes the game much more interesting. When you're just unhappy because you got the side with the windswept terrain or the quicksand or whatever, it's a good place to be in terms of like actually balancing out the board.
Next question. We've got a set of questions from Ben Up. First off, he says, how to win with Murknar?
Murknar. Is this flames?
I'm assuming he's saying Mercenary Heavy Signar.
Mercenary Heavy Signar. So is this like heavy metal? I don't think that's like really a thing. I mean, you can play heavy metal and you could take Nemo 4. You could take some of the partisan stuff, but that's not what I would play in Signar, I don't think. I think Storm Division's really good, and I think there are heavy metal lists that are good. There's some flames lists that are really interesting. I'm just unfamiliar with the term Murknar.
Okay. His next question is, are there places for archons and themes other than Soldiers of Fortune and Flames in the Darkness?
Yeah, definitely.
Which ones would you take in Storm Division or Gravediggers, for example?
Okay, cool. Thank you for more details on this. So both the themes he listed before were Merc's themes, but now these are Signar themes. So I'm going to try to answer both. In Mercenaries, I am a huge fan of Ashlyn too. I think she is one of the coolest casters in all of War Machine. She is super fun to play. And if you're hyper aware and can play scenario smart, she can do a lot of work. I really like her in Laylee's Resistance, and her Marowyn Archons are super scary. Outside of that, you have Strange Bedfellows in Mercs, obviously, so you get Death Archons and Void Archons there, which both are fantastic. I mean, that's the kind of where you want to. I mean, you have the Cephalix theme, operating theater. That's the one. And you get Void Archons there, and they're fantastic with Dexes. Specifically in Gravediggers, I really, really like a single Death Archon. They are really good at picking up the corpses from the dying dudes, and you can cloud wall for them to keep the Death Archon safe and deliver it flying over all your mans and killing other Archons or dudes or their caster, whatever you need. Haley, too, is like the super honorable mention there. Being able to TK your Death Archon is like the dumbest thing you could possibly do with the Death Archon, so big fan. In Storm Division, you can take a Death Archon in pretty much any theme and it's good. So it's Death Archons just are real good. So that would be my answer in Storm Division. Throw a Death Archon in there and watch it just table most of your opponent's infantry or kill their caster or do like 100 points of damage to 5 war beasts, whatever.
All right, so next question. Thoughts on the Storm Division update? Did it make it into your list pair?
Yeah, I'm running double Storm Division in Signar currently. It is very good. My two lists have two very different themes of Storm Division, though. I'm currently running a Nemo 3 list with all of the nerds that shoot lightning. I'm a big fan of the lightning nerd changes. They are really cool. And I have some Centurions, and basically the premise being that I use Nemo 3 to solve for Aurora 2 and Angels. So I just kind of park Centurions in zones to keep the scenario neutral, and then lightning bolt things to death. Really strong. Big fan. In the other theme, I have a don't charge me, bro version of the list. So I run this with Haley too, and this is a combination of Silverline Stormguard and Centurions, Nemo 4. And basically all you're doing is using lots of control effects to keep your opponent from ever getting to play the game the way they want to play it. And whenever your opponent's not having fun, that's the best form of War Machine.
All right, so next question from Benup. He says, how many Riot Quest models is too many Riot Quest models in the list?
Oh boy. I mean, so I have a lot of friends that hate Riot Quest models. They just don't either like their aesthetic, like their power level, whatever their complaint is. I'm personally a huge fan of Riot Quest models. I love how goofy they are. I love how wild and wacky their rules tend to be. Just a massive fan of them in general. My Ashlyn 2 list is, when I play her in a regulars, it's basically all Riot Quest models, which I am just super proud to put on the table. So I guess the answer is, it depends on what you're trying to do. Riot Quest has a very interesting power level for the number of solos. You have solos who cost like 5 or 6 points, which are more powerful in terms than most units. Looking at you, Scythe. But then, like, on the other side, you also have a lot of Riot Quest models that are just kind of, like, not super interesting and don't really do too much and haven't really aged well. Like using Harlow Hold'em High as an example. Harlow used to be the gun archon. He was super terrifying. Now he doesn't even make my lists.
Okay, well, the next question from Benup. He says, were the changes enough to break the mold for Striker 1 / Striker 2 pair?
So I've never been a big fan of that pair. I think that Signar has a lot of interesting things they can do. I think that there are a lot of really good pairings. I think the pair is actually good. It's just the way I tend to want to play War Machine and the way I tend to look at performance at conventions is I don't want to play lists that are easy for my opponent to understand. The more complicated and convoluted the strategy I present to my opponent, the better the chances are that my opponent's going to make a mistake somewhere along the way figuring it out. Like, it doesn't matter who you're playing. You know, like, playing a list that's really hard for you to play also means that it's really hard for your opponent to understand. And I feel like Striker 1 and Striker 2 both have this kind of, like, you deploy your models, your opponent looks at them and then goes, okay, I understand what you're doing. And if their list is capable of playing around it, and they have solves for it, you're just in a really bad position. Conversely, if you're playing like a Haley 2 or maybe like a Siege 2 or something that has like some weird threat range manipulation or control effects, you end up with like these really weird matchups where, as an example, I played a game 2 days ago where I was playing Kray in Storm Division with Centurions and some Silverline Storm Guard and Nemo 4. And my opponent just kept stumbling over the fact that nothing in my list could be charged. You could charge Nemo 4, but like telling your opponent, like, no, you can't charge these dudes in this zone with your Death Archon because they're base to base with each other. And then he's like, oh, okay, I'll just shoot them then. And you're like, okay, yeah, you can totally shoot them, but they're defense 19 because they have force barrier and they're in cover. There's a lot of stumbling blocks that happen when also your Warjack's threat like 16 inches and then repo 5 and can't be charged in response. So you have to, like, the more steps you can have in a list that make your opponent confused, the better. And I think that's what the CID did. The CID gave Signar new options for confusing your opponent, because like the Striker 1, Striker 2 pairing was the pairing in Signar. I mean, like, there were some like Siege versions, but the problem with the Siege list is that it made your matchups overall a little bit too weak. You had like some really good matchups, but then you had a lot of like really awkward or bad matchups because you didn't have the Striker 2 to cover them. So with that said, I think that the CID gave you a lot of options. And I think that in the new Steamroller also gave you more options. So I think that a Haley 2 should be probably in every pairing. She is back to being a dominant caster. Her tools are really strong and she's really relevant in the meta. And if you have Haley 2, you can play the Kruger 2 matchup with her. You can play the Aurora 2 matchup with her. You can play pretty much most of the meta. They're not all great matchups, but you can play them. The only thing I'm personally concerned about with Haley 2 is Gunnbjorn. Gunnbjorn 2 just murders Haley. I don't know how to keep her alive. Mm-hmm. I've tried many different strategies and I've died every time. So I shouldn't say that. I've just lost games every time. But I will say that it is really hard to have a list in Signar that feels great into Gunnbjorn 2 while also being able to play the scenario against a Kolgrimma, as an example.
All right, so the next question from Benup. He says, Viva la Resistance! The latest Crucible Guard releases, Signar changes, and good old trusty Protectorate models, read Choir plus anything else, have me excited for some Lely's Resistance. What's up your sleeve lately?
Lely's Resistance, my favorite list in Mercs right now. It is... So there's a couple problems with Lely's Resistance. Problem number one, you don't get Death Archons. That's a pretty big problem. Problem number two, you have to play against Death Archons. So the first place to start is you have to have a plan. So understanding like what metalists bring Death Archons is probably the first part of your list building, like your pairing building thing. So you're like, okay, Kruger 2, Aurora 2, maybe Kolgrimma. Those are probably the list you're and like Scorn. Those are the factions and lists you're going to run into Death Archons the most. So your Lely's Resistance can't play against those factions unless you have a very specific solution to Death Archons. Because like the way Lely's Resistance works is you're reliant on your infantry units and solos to do lots of work. However, those infantry units and solos get absolutely murdered by Death Archons. So you have to be aware of that. Now, with that said, I am a huge fan of McBane in Lely's Resistance. You get Menite Archons. I love it. You feed on Menite Archons. You collect some wins. Super fun. Ashlyn 2 Lely's Resistance with failed experiments. Probably my favorite list in Mercenaries besides Ashlyn 2 Irregulars. Ashlyn 2 does so much for failed experiments. It's actually wild. So failed experiments are super durable by themselves. They're also really fast. She gives them true path, so they're faster. She can give them unyielding, so they're more durable. You can take Trencher Dude, I forget his name, and he can give them feign death, repo 3, and fully heal them. She has Tactician Laelies, so you can take Ragman. He can walk through the failed experiments, Dark Shroud, and then they can charge through him. There's like a ton of like freedom of activation because of this. So that's super cool. Huge fan there. Also, you get like Marwyn Archons, which are also really good with her. And the list goes on. There's lots of synergies. With all of that said, Ashlyn 2 also runs a really good Signar version of Laelia's resistance. You do miss out on like the normal Storm Division goodness, but you do still get your Trenchers with Repo 3, who can put up the Cloud Wall. You get Storm Lances, and unlike Signar, you get Trenchers and Storm Lances in the same list. Storm Lances with Hand of Fate and True Path are absolutely terrifying. And the ability to have, because you have Tactician Laelies, and they're both Laelies units now, you can charge your Storm Lances through your Trenchers. So your freedom of activation is a lot easier. Because like that was the big problem with Haley 3, right? Haley 3, back in the day, you had like a lot of weird positioning requirements. So the way you beat Haley 3 was just making her position over and over and over again, and then watching her destroy herself on clock. But with Ashlyn 2, you don't really have those same positioning requirements. Not only do you have a speed buff, and not only is everything Pathfinder base, you also have Tactician in a place you didn't have it before. So that's all really, really powerful and cool. Hand of Fate Trenchers, Hand of Fate Storm Division, or Storm Lances, wow. Ragman for Dark Shroud, like lots of really cool and interesting stuff. Big fan.
All right, so next question, you'll love this from Bennett. He says, talk Ashlyn to me. Is she the Bay-est or not?
I mean, Ashlyn 2 is the bottom bitch. She is the best. She's who you go to when you need someone you can rely on. She is my favorite caster in the game right now. I've played her more than anyone else recently. I don't know why Privateer Press always does this to me, but every single time I'm like, oh, you know, like I'm starting to get excited about being like back, going back to cons or going, you know, like a few years ago, it was Denegra 2 and then it was Scar 3. And now it's Ashlyn 2. There's always a strong Warcaster woman that's ready to be taken to cons and dominate some people. She's pretty awesome.
Well, I think that we can put this episode on pause. We'll probably I'll probably do some follow-up questions with Ashlyn, and then we'll continue with listener questions. But Matt, I wanted to thank you for sharing your time.
Oh, you're very welcome. Happy to be here. Thank you for thanking me, I guess.
Yeah, you bet. And as always, check out Muse on Minis, check out Discount Games Inc. And thank you to all the patrons. You guys are awesome. And stay tuned for the next episode.